we're dealing with a subject in halacha. It's a very, very delicate subject. Obviously, for people who are in the parasha, it's delicate is not the word. For people who are not in the parasha, it's a question of understanding a very what's becoming an increasingly common phenomenon nowadays. The phenomenon of adoption, of adopting children. And we were discussing, so far we discussed two subjects. So far we discussed the topic of whether or not that child is seen according to halacha as being the son or the daughter of the adopting parents. And we learned that as far as shtaros are concerned, as far as a get is concerned, and so on, we discussed that. Then last week we began to discuss the subject of, adopting Jewish children from Jewish parents. And we already learned that adopting a Jewish child in many ways can be more complicated than adopting a non-Jewish child. As Rav Moshe began his shuva, there are advantages and there are disadvantages to both, to Jewish parents and non-Jewish parents, Jewish baby or non-Jewish baby. And we discussed what the problems would be in the case of a single Jewish mother, where we don't know who the father is, and then the other, which is, creates an enormous problem in halacha, and also, even when we do know, nevertheless, there's a question, if we don't know who the father, another case, if we don't know who the father is, and there's questions about the mother possibly having, even by a long stretch of the imagination, maybe having had this child with somebody who she was not permitted to be with, and so on. So we discussed this. We saw a piece of Ramesh's tshuva, Ramesh's responsum last week, and the subject we're going to deal with now is the question of what issues are involved in adopting a non-Jewish child. What issues are involved in adopting a non-Jewish child? Most of the time, that's the situation. Most of the time, that's the situation, a non-Jewish child. So in order to learn this, in order to read that little next part there of Ramesh's tshuva that we have to work on, and then a little bit of a tshuva from Rav Sternbuch, there's a piece of the Gemara, there's a famous piece of Gemara that I'm going to run through. Since you don't all have the Gemara in front of you, I'll do it quickly. Still, it needs to be done. Because without hearing this Gemara, without hearing what the Gemara is on Ksubas Daf Yud Aleph, without hearing this Gemara, the subject is almost, it's almost ridiculous that's the Gemara from there. I have the Gemara from there, I'm sorry. It would be almost ridiculous to even learn this inyan and take it seriously without having a familiarity, a very basic familiarity, with the Gemara and Rashi, and maybe, I don't know if we'll have time to touch upon the Tosfos, but at least the knowledge that there exists this sugya, and then mitsham, you go home to try to take a look at the entire sugya properly and Daf Yud Aleph and Ksubas. It's very important. The Mishnah here is dealing. The Mishnah states that Giyaris v'Shvi v'Shivcha shenivdu v'Shnezgaru v'Neshtachu p'chusas mibnei sholos shonim v'yamechik suvosim asai v'yesh lehatainis psulim. The Mishnah is dealing with certain individuals who come from a questionable background, where in halacha you know that there is a ksuba, the wedding contract of a girl who is a psula, who is a virgin, is 200, and of a person who is not, of a woman who was not, it's a hundred. Now there are certain girls who, because of their status before their wedding, there is a strong possibility or a suspicion, according to halacha, which we're not going to get into, it's not important for our subject, that even though they might say that they're virgins, but there's a likelihood that they're not. Are they a giyaris? The assumption is that somebody who converted to Judaism, a woman who converted, the assumption is that if she did that as an adult, as we'll see, if she did that as an adult, the assumption is that she had relations before she became Jewish. And also, the assumption is that a Jewish woman who was taken into captivity, who was captured by non-Jews, that she was, God forbid, mistreated, and by a shivcha, by a maidservant, where the halacha assumes a general status of loose morals and promiscuity in their behavior. So these women in general, when they marry, when they come into a Klal Yisrael, when they marry, so the ksuba is not 200, but we're going to assume that they're going to receive, we're going to assume that they're not psulas, they're not virgins, and they therefore would receive the ksuba in the case of divorce or the death of the husband. They would receive the ksuba of 100, not of the 200. That is basically the subject. Now the Mishnah here is saying that this, however, does not apply if we're dealing with a girl who's, if girls who are pchusas mibnei shalosh shanim v'yom echad. If the girl is under 3 years old, if the girl is under 3 years and a day, then the halach is that's how old she was when she was converted, or that old or younger when she was converted, or when she was released from slavery or released from captivity. If she was a very little girl, 3 years and a day and younger, so then the assumption is that she is okay, and that she was not that she is still a virgin. And the halach is therefore that the ksuba would be for 200, unless it's contested. And that's the subject that we don't have to get into. If it's contested that perhaps, you know, that she wasn't and something happened and a maisa happened, okay, that has to be brought before the court and so on. That's called tainus besulin. If he says that she's not a besula, I found that she's not a besula, but the general assumption is that from that young an age, even if she had been molested, that the hymen, that part of the body would grow back and so on. But we don't have to go into all the details. This is what the Mishnah is about. Now, what does it have to do with anything that we're learning? It has to do very much with what we're learning. Look at the first line of the Gemara. If you have the Gemara, if not, you should look at it when you get home. Amr of Huna. Try to listen. It's hard to listen to a Gemara, especially this time of the night. But try to concentrate. Amr of Huna. Ger Kotman, Bilnei Saltas Bezdin. The Gemara says that a Ger Kotman, that if there's a baby who is going to be converted, a baby who obviously does not have any das, does not have any awareness or understanding of what's happening to him or to her, Ger Kotten, the Gemara says, Matbil and Isai al Das Bezdin, that the Bezdin, the court of three, as is required in all halachas of situations of conversion, the Bezdin here assumes, as Rashi explains, the position of being the father of this, the father who's responsible, the father who takes the responsibility for this child, and the Bezdin can take the child and convert the child. In the case of a boy, of course, it would mean mila and tefillah, we need a bris and the mikveh. In the case of a girl, it would mean the mikveh. Now, how could a Jewish court do that without the consent? We don't have anybody that has any intelligence here to consent. So the Gemara says, "My kamash, what's this teaching us? What's the chiddush here? The schus ulai." The din that's being taught over here is that it's a schus, that it's considered to be a privilege. It's considered to be a privilege for a non-Jew to become a Jew. That's a schus. Mezachin la'adam shalei b'fanav. And the general principle in halacha is that you are allowed to be mezakeh somebody, you're allowed to do a favor or something that's beneficial, advantageous for another person, even without that person's knowledge. You don't have to have, if you want to claim $1 million lottery ticket for someone, that you know that the person doesn't realize, forgot about it, and you want to do a tayv and you want to claim that for the person, or you want to get a mitziah that you find for somebody else, the understanding is, I could do something to help someone that's advantageous, that's good for someone, I don't need that person's consent. We assume that person would be very grateful if you did that. So that is the rule in halacha, the principle in halacha that's functioning here. How am I able to convert a baby? Again, we of course know that Jews do not proselytize. We're not talking about where we're going looking for non-Jewish babies and dunking them into the mikveh. We never did that. And that's why the Gemara is going to explain later on that the usual situation is dealing here is where there's a parent or parents that are converting as well. But how, but their consent halachically is meaningless, of course. But this is not done against anybody's will. Jews don't do that. As a rule, we don't do that. Nevertheless, how does this work when we are converting a baby that has no opinion in the matter? So the answer is, it's a schus. It's advantageous. It's a privilege for the child. So the Gemara asks right away.
I'm sorry, Rabbi. Last time you said that many times non-Jewish children would be brought up in Jewish homes. It was clear that they weren't Jews and they were not converted.
Right.
I mean, from this, it seems that this is a zachar shalom shalom fana.
Yeah.
That's what should have been done on a regular basis in Europe. Or
right, but it was not, and for good reason, it was not done because they were careful to. They were careful to stay out of trouble. First of all, in Europe, that kind of an action could cause a pogrom, right? Would cause a pogrom and would cause terrible sorrows for Jews. They allowed Jews to pay for non-Jews to be brought up in their homes, but to convert a child and so on, if it was discovered, could be extremely dangerous. There are other sociological reasons why not. In terms of halacha, the problem is just trying to give the appearance that that's my kid, my biological kid. As far as why not just make it easier and convert the child we'll see that was for reasons that we're going to see in the Gemara, that that's not something which is necessarily the most advantageous thing to do.
The ideal would be this, then, to convert the child.
Yeah, if we have a non-Jewish child in our midst, and the child is alone and lost and so on, then we would say, ideally, as long as you inform the child that this is what happened, then that it would be the ideal situation. Yeah, it would be.
The child has an option.
That's what we're going to talk about. Right, the child has the option. We'll talk about it in a minute.
Yeah.
Right, so the Gemara says, this chusulai v'zochalad m'shalai b'fanav tanina. Zochalad m'shalai b'fanav ein chavalad m'shalai b'fanav. You're allowed to do something that's advantageous or that's beneficial to a person without the person's knowledge, without the person knowing about it, but you cannot do something that could possibly be a disadvantage or could be harmful. You cannot do that without a person's knowledge. Ma'adu te'mar v'kucham mefker nechalai. Da'kaimalon the Eved Vader of Kerem Nechalei. So the Gemara asks the Gemara says that that's why we need this din to tell us. I might generally be saying what? There's a principle, another principle in Halacha that says that Avda Behef Kerem Nechalei means that in a certain way it's easier to be a guy. It's easier to be not Jewish. It's more fun. From a purely hedonistic point of view of what's enjoyable in Olam Hazeh, in Olam Hazeh things, it's most often we're not the ones that are envied for exercising restraint and modesty and so on. And the rule is that Avda Behefker Nechalei, that an Eved, a servant, a slave, is very much enjoys Hefkeris. So who says that it's a schus? You took this kid. This kid could have been the captain of his football team. Could have had every girlfriend in Pleasantville, USA, or something, right? I never saw that movie. I just heard about it. Could have had every girlfriend, right? And would have been the most popular guy on the team. And now he's steiging away in yeshiva, maybe, hopefully. And if he looks the wrong way, his rabbi tells him, "Oh, you're going to get in big trouble for that." So you ask him. He says, "That's a schus. I give all the schus. I wish you would have told me. I don't think it's such a schus. I'd rather be the captain of the football team. Who says a schus? The general thing is I'd rather have a good time." Yes, truth and truth, justice, and the Jewish way, whatever you want to call it, but it's not something necessarily that I would have chosen. So the Gemara says, so Kamashmal Dahanim Iligodl the Tom the Yisur. When do we say that you might be doing something which is a disadvantage or that it's a disservice to the person that you're converting? That's only if it's an adult. Why? Because the Gemara says, because an adult is Tom the Yisur. He already tasted the taste of an Aveira. An adult who wasn't brought up in holiness. So in the mind of the adult, I wish you would have told me. Or in the mind of the not that I wish you would have told me. But in the mind of the adult, we apply the rule of hefker nechalei. He'd rather just be hefker. He'd rather do whatever he wants. Aval katan, but for a baby that was brought up in kedusha and was taught the truth and understands the beauty of Yiddishkeit and so on, that's takas schusula. That is a schus. That's considered to be a benefit. That's considered to be an advantage for the child. So the Gemara says, "Lema Messiah." So the Gemara says, "Now this. So what does this discussion have to do with the Mishnah? Remember, the Mishnah is dealing with a little girl. That's if a girl is less than 3 years old. So these girls. So the first word of the Mishnah is Hagiyaris, is that a girl that was converted less than 3 years old? Right. We're talking about a little child. So the Gemara says, "Oh, we could bring our Mishnah, and this Gemara that we're learning from Rav Huna work out very nicely." So Gemara's lema misayilei. We can add support to this. What we just learned, the concept of converting a baby, converting a child. This is supported by the Mishnah itself. What agiris hashviv hashifcha shenivduv shenizgarav shenistachu b'chusnu b'nei shalosh shanav yemechad. So our Mishnah is dealing with a little child that's being converted. So we see that there is such a concept that even a child who has no das, a child doesn't know what she's doing, what he's doing, what he's getting into, that a child can be converted. So Gemara says, "My love that vilinu al das bezn." So pashtus is that we're dealing with the Mishnah in the case of a child that was converted, that was brought into the mikveh al das bezn, the Jewish court took the child and brought her into the and put her into the mikveh and finished, took her out of the mikveh. They were Megayah, they converted her. So the Gemara says, "Lehoch, my eskin and begeshin is garabon of b'nai sevimai. The neichlahu, b'mai da'ovid avuhan. The Gemara says, no, we could be talking about, what's it talking about over here? The Mishnah could be dealing with a situation where it's begershin is gairu banavu b'nai sevima, where there's a family conversion. Where there's a family that together is going and converting. So under those circumstances, is the nechelu b'mai dovid avun. The nechelu b'mai dovid avun means that it's certainly that for that child, it's nechle, it's an advantage, it's certainly a schuz, that she's not being separated from her family, and that she's being brought up together with her family in the state of conversion and being converted. Be it as it may, the Gemara then says, Omer of Yosef, Higdiloi Yechaylin Limchais. The din is that once, that when the child reaches age, meaning for a boy, bar mitzvah, for a girl, bas mitzvah, when the child who was converted by Bezdin, for whatever reason, with the parents, without the parents, it's allowed with the parents, whatever happened, when such a conversion takes place, so the halacha is that once the child becomes bas mitzvah or bar mitzvah, he or she can protest that I don't want it. Higdila, that's where Rav says, Higdila yichaylin limchais. Rashi says yichaylin limchais. The loymer, ef shaynin liyaz geir, I don't want to be, I don't want to be a convert. V'chayzrin l'surin, and therefore he or she can go back to the non-Jewish way of life. Vain lona la'onshin bebezin, and they cannot be punished at all. They cannot be mistreated or punished by any Jewish court. V'afilu yadenu tekifa, and even if it's in Eretz Yisrael at a time when the Jews are in charge of things, we cannot in any way punish or mistreat the child for making that decision. V'im kidesh isha. Now what happens if he was already mekadesh? What happens if before bar mitzvah? That's something that Rav Moshe gets into a little bit, because the kasha from Gemara in Yevamos was how could you have kedusha katan? So all right, I'm not going to get into the details. It's not necessary for us. But let's say the boy, let's say he already married someone from a younger age. So that's an interesting situation. He married someone while he's Jewish, but his Judaism was sort of waiting for the bar mitzvah to see what was going to happen. And now when he's bar mitzvah, so he has imagine this bizarre situation. Here he's got his nice little young little wife. He's got his nice little family, and everybody's, you know, going to yeshiva and to school. Fine, and he says, you know, I forgot it. It's not for me.
Does that mean what? That it's not chal?
So then, v'im kiddush isha, so mishemicha ainet tzricha get liyas ki yisrael mumah. No, she just goes out. It's a very unusual case. Again, to go into the details of this, this is a very famous Tosfos, how it works. And the Shida Mekubetz is going to be shown. It's a very Leibedic thing, but basically there is an akira, there is an undermining of this relationship. And the question is, what's the status of the children and so on? But lemaisa, it's ois kedushin. It's not they're not married anymore, and there's no requirement for a divorce for a get. Just walks away. Yeah, walks away. That's that the chacham have the power. And again, without getting into the whole sugya, the chacham have the power in this situation to annul, to remove the status of being a married couple. It's a very unusual thing, but this is the din that the child has the right of mecha, of protesting the geiris when he comes of age.
And he's not going to be considered a Jew after that.
Right. That's it. Then you have all different shilas. What about wine that the kid touched before? You know, all the things that he was doing while he was Jewish, and now how do we view this? Do we say that he was never a Jew? Or that he was a Jew until that moment? I mean, these are big childless, okay. You know, how do we view the past? How do we look at the past? And that certainly will have the greatest impact upon questions of arayas and, you know, relationships and so on, okay. So big childless, they have relations with a kohen. You know, he had relations with a kohen, with a girl, and she wants to marry a kohen. You know, it's all kinds of childless, a thousand childless, okay. So,
probably doesn't have to walk in
that. No.
Something you married before 13.
No, right. Omer of Yosef, let's just finish this piece of Gemara. Omer of Yosef, Higdila Yechol Limchais. Okay? So we learn that from our Mishnah, that if this Gioris, she was Miss Gioris, when she was a little girl, when she was 3 years old or less than 3 years old, then when she gets married, her ksuba's for 200. If according to what we learn now, when she grows up, when she becomes 12 years old, and she's allowed to what? She's allowed to protest, she's allowed to undo it. So if that's the case, why should we give her a ksuba of, why should we give her now a ksuba of 200? If ultimately what might happen in the future is that she could be meicha, and the fellow is unprotected, and she has a ksuba of 200. So the Gemara says l'chigod nami. So the Gemara says like this: Laksuba to Azla ve'Achla begiusa lechigodla. In other words, when she's, so the problem is like this: that even when she's older, after 3 years old, we see that according to what we're learning, after 3 years old, until the time that she's bas mitzvah, maybe even later on in life. Let's say they never told her that she was converted. If she could be Marcha, I mean, we're going to see this something we're going to discuss in Rav Moshe. Does that mean what happens if you never told the girl or you never told the guy, the boy? When he was bar mitzvah, she was bar mitzvah. Does that mean that afterwards? So what happens if you never told them? Does that mean what happens if they found out afterwards? And the parents say, you know, I have to tell you the truth. You know, you're looking for shidduch, and I want to tell you, and I had a situation like this. I got to tell you the truth that you're not, you know, you were converted. You tell it to a 20-year-old, to a 25-year-old. So does that mean that at that point there could be a mecha? There could still be. Can the person still protest? So the Gemara is saying, it means the Gemara ends up by saying that the pashtus is that this time is not davka when she's 12 years old or it could be even beyond that. That at any time, even in the future, she could continue. She could be meicha. She could protest this, and she can go out of the marriage. She can leave the marriage. Right, as we said, the marriage will be annulled. The marriage will be removed. The Gemara was worried about this. What happens if she's 12 years old and she says, I'm fine? And she's fine. And then afterwards she gets married like a Jewish girl. And we give her the regular ksuba of a Jewish girl. But aren't we afraid that afterwards, what happens if she changes her mind afterwards and she is meicha? What happens if she protests later on? Oh, she didn't protest. She was fine with it when she was bas mitzvah. And then we married her off. She got married when she's 18. So marriage, is a nice ksuba, everything is fine. So the Gemara says, Kevin Sheikh Dila Sha'achas Vele Mikhsa Shuv Eini Chedalim Chais. That's the rule. In other words, once she's 12 years old and she had the opportunity and she was told, listen, you have to make a decision. You want to stay Jewish or not? And if she says yes, then after that, she's always Jewish. So therefore,
retroactively,
hmm?
She could be 90 years old and at that point say, I wasn't, and then you have all these questions or issues.
Right, so the din is,
the whole life.
Right, so the halach is that's not what happens. What happens is that as long as when she was 12 years old, she had the opportunity to protest, and we told her that, you could get out if you want, and she says, no, I want to stay. Therefore, we're not concerned, we're not worried, that at some point later in her life, when she gets married, we're going to be stuck with the guy's going to be stuck with a ksuba, with a girl that leaves the marriage. It turns out she's not Jewish. And to have that kind of a situation when the halacha is that from the time that she already she did not protest when she was bas mitzvah, then the din is shuv ani yechel limchais. She can no longer
implies,
she cannot protest.
Which implies that she didn't have an opportunity to.
So that's what we're going to talk about. So that implies that if she did not have an opportunity, if nobody told her about this, that she would be allowed to protest. It's not like a magic date. If it has to do with her consent. When she's in a state of awareness, bas mitzvah is when she first achieves the state of awareness, so then it would seem, pashas we would say, that if nobody ever told her that she's converted, that she could, and then only later on they told her that you're converted, she would have the opportunity at that time to say, I don't want it.
But does she get a ksuba?
Okay, so then that's a separate question.
So that's then what I'm saying. Why is the shayla look ksuba? The point they brought up, why stick a guy with a 200 zuz ksuba versus 100 zuz ksuba? Because she may back out. If she was a baldass and said, I'm staying with it, and then later after back out, she she was a Jewish woman all along, and it doesn't change it.
Right. No, but
so the shaila shouldn't be.
Well, it could be a question of what could be used against the 200 at this present time. There are ways that that amount could be used to her advantage even before that time. The fact that she has 200 there, and as far as other money is concerned, against that. There are things that could be to her advantage in the interim. And the question is, why should that be, if in the end this whole thing could be...
Why disqualify her from that extra 100 zuzim? I mean, you got to give the benefit of that and say when she became a balas das, she said, I'm sticking with it. She got married, marriage was going awry, and, you know, she was whatever it means. But she's always Jewish, so in that case, she should be entitled to silver. If it's the other case where she was never told, and then opts out later, she's not going to get silver anyway, so I don't see why the...
Right, I understand. The only thing the Gemara is asking is that what the Gemara is asking is v'sakdach hidili chalunim ches yavin laksuba da'azla v'akla b'giyusa, that let her continue to have the value that she had before she converted. What practical difference would it make? You know, you're right. It's not so clear that how much of a practical difference it would make. But al kalponim, as far as her status is concerned, this is the chiddush that the Gemara is saying, is that as long as there was 1 hour where she consented, and if she was after the time of Bas Mitzvah, and there was that 1 hour, so then the halach is. That she already cannot back out anymore. That's it.
Right, because if you pass him any other way, there's no surety forever.
Right. So that closes the lid on it. Now let's go back. Now let's go through Moshe's tshuva.
I just wondering why didn't make it clear.
Yeah.
Is it? Are you supposed to tell? Is anybody not supposed to? Tell?
Yeah, you have. Yeah. Yes, you have to. Yes. Yeah. You have to tell her. You have to tell her.
Only the parents can tell her.
If the parents refuse to tell her, then the Beis Din has the responsibility. Right? We're going to see this is an uncomfortable situation with adoptions. In the case of people who are observant, they obviously, and for other reasons, that they have to tell. This is what we're dealing with: a non-Jewish child that was converted, that was adopted. So many people just like to bring up that baby as being a complete Jew, and not to say a word. Everything is fine. They don't. Nobody has to know anything. The baby was taken as an infant. I was converted as an infant. And was brought up, these are my parents, and I'm Jewish from birth. So that we see that according to halacha, you cannot do that. You cannot do that. You cannot hide the non-Jewish origins of a ger from a child. You cannot do that. Because otherwise, the validity of the conversion is constantly in question. It doesn't have, it is lacking, it is missing that validity of that needed to take place, or the validation that had to take place at the time of Bas Mitzvah or Bar Mitzvah. So that's one reason why you wouldn't be allowed to do that. So if Moshe writes about this, if you have the Igros Moshe, the pages are mixed up, but it's Shin Chav Gimel, it's the page we were doing last week. It says Igros Moshe on top, Yerdeya. Yes? Yeah? The last page, okay. Then we go back to an earlier page, it's all mixed up. The Moshe says, "V'chisarin ze." I'm talking about the left-hand column. On the left-hand column, the second paragraph, "V'chisarin ze." So the Moshe begins by saying that this chisarin, meaning this problem of yichus, who was the kid? Where were the parents? How come? Who did the mother have this baby with? "V'chisarin ze leikim shanachim." This doesn't apply at all when we're dealing with a non-Jewish child. We don't care. Right? It doesn't really make much of it. Doesn't make a difference to us what kind of relationship where the kid comes from. Who cares? There's no issue of yichus. There's no problem of mamzeris. There's no problem of an illegitimate child, of a chayiv karis. And so there's no problem. So Ramesh says, "V'chisarin ze leikim shanachim." So when it comes to adopting a non-Jewish baby, we have none of these problems of who are the parents. Doesn't make a difference to us who the parents are. Therefore, we don't care if he might end up marrying his sister, because a convert has no sisters or brothers. According to halacha, you know that a convert is viewed as somebody who was just born. A convert is allowed to marry his sister who converts. There's no family relationship. They're not family anymore. So let's say it happens that we don't know who the parents are, and this convert ends up marrying a sister that converted. So what? It's okay. We're not afraid of that. But Jews were afraid of that you might end up marrying your sister, right? That's why you have to know who the parents are. You have to try to investigate and find out, you know, because you might end up marrying your own sister, God forbid. But therefore we have to identify the parents. But in the case of a non-Jewish child with non-Jewish parents, it doesn't make a difference who the parents are. We're not afraid that the kid's going to end up marrying family. He has no family. When he converts, he has no family. So there's no fear of who is he marrying. So he says, that's what it means. Like the ein behen mamzeis leisa krivus lachsheis gayu. There's no isa. There's no prohibition of marrying a relative once the conversion takes place. Nevertheless, Rav Moshe says you are obligated to tell the child before he's 13 or a girl before she's bas mitzvah. You must tell him. Lezachem kaidem bas yud beis in a kaver for a girl. Why? Mishum de rishoyin she rishoyin oz limchais al hageirus. Because then the geirus the child must have the opportunity to protest the geirus, the conversion, if he or she wishes. Now, when they're small children, Rav Moshe says, when they're children, the halacha says that you have to tell them when they're 12 or 13, not when they're 20. When they're children, they're still under the influence of the family. The understanding, of course, here is that we're dealing with an Orthodox Jewish family. Because if it's not an Orthodox Jewish family, there are much more serious problems than the question of adoption. There, the whole question of an invalid conversion might be, and that's happening by the thousands in America now, in Eretz Yisrael, all the complications that have to do with conversions that are not valid, and if the conversion is an invalid conversion, or even if it took place in front of a bezna, but the child is being raised without Shabbos, without kashrus, without basic halacha, so then the conversion is very questionable about whether it's valid altogether. Right? In other words, there is no halachic Judaism does not recognize non-halachic conversion, very, very questionable, very, very big question. Very big question. Therefore, you have this very tragic. I mean, they'll find some so-called Orthodox rabbi that'll do it for the right money, most of these situations. But is it valid? The greatest poskim, nimnu v'gomru, that it's invalid. It itself is a very important discussion about what happens if a person, mixes mitzvahs, not all the mitzvahs, and there's a tshuva from time oizim, and Rav Moshe deals with a lot. It's out of the realm of what we're dealing with, but it can safely be said that the consensus of poskim say that if it's clear that we're dealing with a non-halachic family, that this type of a conversion, even if it was done halachically, that this type of a conversion is invalid. If the child's being brought up to be Mechal Shabbos, then what's the schus? What schus have you? This whole conversion. But the whole, it could always become. Let's not get carried away because each one of us knows a 10 bala tshuva, a 7 bala tshuva. Let's not get carried away. The whole permission to convert a non-Jewish, to convert the baby as an infant, is only based upon the premise that it's a schus. What's the schus? The schus is to be a yid, no? It's a schus to be a Jew, to be a Jew from the Amman Nivcha, from the chosen people, and whatever that means, and all the benefits that you get, and so on. You get a discount at the meal mart, and a Muslim, whatever benefits you have as being part of the clan. But is it a schus if the child's going to end up being a Machal Shabbos and a Neuchel Neveles and Treifus? That's not a schus. That's what schus is, just the opposite. A child, God forbid, for a Jew, it's not a schus to eat Neveles and Treifus. You end up getting, for every single thing that you put in your mouth, you end up getting Chas V'Shalom. God forbid, you end up getting patched, and who knows what in the next world. What kind of a schus is it to be not religious? It's not a schus to be not religious. It's a much bigger schus for that person in terms of his or her own welfare. Eternal welfare, I'd be much better off never being a Jew than being a Jew that eats Neveles and Treifus. If you're a Jew that you're ready, listen, you're born Jewish, we struggle with trying to be good. We don't have a choice, right? So we're trying to do the best we can under the circumstances. But you tell a non-Jew, how would you like to spend the next, 4,000 yovels in Gehenna for being Mechal Shabbos, doing whatever else you like to do? What am I, crazy? Why would I sign such a contract? I have to be crazy. That's not a schus. It's not a schus. That's the biggest chayva in the world. It's the biggest disadvantage that a person could have in the world. Right? That's not a schus. A schus is for a yid that's going to have olam haba, a yid that has Torah mitzvahs, a yid that Jew that's keeping Torah mitzvahs. That's a schus. Well, they're struggling, they want, but it's not a schus. We all hope to do tshuva. We all want to end up in the right place. It's been delaying it a little bit, but we hope to have a good end. Everybody wants to have a nice finish, right? So it'll work out, Mitzvah Hashem, in the end. Halafai should be soon, it should work out. But why should a guy sign such a paper to get himself into such sorrows? It's not a schus.
So those conversions are a question then, if you're not...
Of course. No legitimate Rav, no legitimate Posik would convert a child in a non-religious, that's being brought up in a non-religious home. I had a few weeks ago almost close to a 12-hour discussion with a relative of mine. I hope she never gets this tape, it's no reason why she should. But I had a long discussion with a relative of mine, a non-religious relative who I love very much, who was married very late and didn't have children, and has now adopted a child. And my father said to me, I got the assignment, of course, go talk to her. And to tell you how uncomfortable, I don't even have to tell you how uncomfortable it was, because I never discussed religion with a bechlal. It was a thing, you know, don't push. And she happens to be a spiritual type, and I was talking to her a lot about it. And Baruch Hashem, the husband is a svadishim. So the husband already, you know, has a certain, even though he's not religious, he has a hergish, he has a feeling for it. So, but you know, they're 100% comfortable sending the kid to yeshiva. And she told me, Ramani, I want to talk to you a little bit. She said, I know, don't worry, we're going to bring the child up 100%. We're going to send it to a yeshiva. And so I said, I'm not just talking about the kid, I'm talking about the two of you. You have to have a house, you have to have Shabbos, you have to be careful. So we're ready, the house is already. So I'm hopeful, I think that it's going to have a good ending, Mitzvah Shem. You know, they're going to come around, the two of them are going to come around, because I think she's someone that could have all the years, and he certainly, so this is a, you know, but who converted the child was an Orthodox rabbi. An Orthodox rabbi that converted the child. The Orthodox, he shouldn't have done it. And he took the money and he made a lot of nice blessings and stuff, and he made a little speech, and again, he's happy, he got his check, and he goes home. In the meantime, this is a situation where, if things go well at the right time, I'm going to of course push for a second gayer position. But in the meantime, this is the question. This is the question. It's not a schus. So that's what Moshe says over here. So he says. He says as little children. When they're little children, they're still under the hashpa of Hamagadla, my son. They're under the hashpa, the influence of the Orthodox family that's raising them. It's a very good thing. This is why the opportunity is the first opportunity that they have their own free choice, so to speak, when they're 12 or they're 13. So at that time, they're still under the influence of the Orthodox family. So it's very unlikely, as Moshe says. It's very unlikely that somebody who was raised in an Orthodox home from the time of infancy is going to say, nah, you know, I want out. It's very unlikely. Or at least that's how it was in 1957 when the tshuva was written. It's very unlikely. And if you go to the kid and say, listen, you want out? And the kid says, no. After, that's it. It's finished. Done. They're Jews. And afterwards, they can't be Meich anymore. But if you never tell the kid, if you didn't tell the kid when they're 12 or 13, if you're telling the kid before they're 12 or 13, or that they should know when they're 12 or 13, that's already fine. It's a mechai, because they're usually going to say, you know, of course we want to be with our family. Mr. Shai, we want to be Jewish. But if you didn't, but if you don't tell the kid.
So you're saying even if you don't have to wait till the magic
date? No. Beforehand. Yeah, sure.
The kid has to understand.
Yeah, sure. The kid was old enough to understand. And when the kid's 13 years old, we had in the shul also a nice one. As long as the kid is old enough to understand, and so you realize that, you know, when you bas mitzvah, you can stay at the car there. When you bas mitzvah, you have a choice. And, you know, you want to be meicher, you can be meicher. But if you don't tell the kid, how yuchlu limchis la'olam? He could be 70 years old. He's just found out. He says, hey, I don't want to do this. You never gave me a choice. I want out. What after that? I don't have to worry about olam haba. I don't want to handle them. I want out. Kolzman shi yisvadu. As long as they didn't know, and now they find out. So this is the first requirement. This is the first requirement that Ramesha says, that in the case of a non-Jew who's being adopted, this can be done. There's no problem. However, the child must be told and have the opportunity to protest.
And if the child knows but doesn't verbally acknowledge a choice,
that's an interesting question. It's machlokas poskim. Most poskim say it's okay. It's okay. The child, we don't have to have a proclamation. If the child knows the score and was told and doesn't say anything, we assume that shtika, that silence means that he's ratifying it. But what we're going to see, Mitzvah Shem, next time is that there's both in Rav Moshe and Yibor Ben Chaim L'Chaim, Rav Moshe Shtenberg, there is a possibility for a method by which we might not have to put the kid through that. There is a possibility, and interestingly
well,
enough, what we're going to
bring the parents through.
Yeah, well, what we're going to right, this is true. What we're going to talk about is the possibility of a child that's being bought from an agency. Then, in the case of a kinyan, in the case of a purchase, then it might be. And Rav Moshe even says that we should officially make this child an acquisition, like a slave, and then free the child. In the circumstances, then we would not have to have. We would perhaps avoid the whole situation of going through the discomfort of telling the kid, the infant. But we're going to discuss that. Because once you, if it's a question of ownership or a slave that was freed and then becomes, and then it's converted by virtue of being of the shichur, of the emancipation, so then we would not, then we don't apply this halacha of yochalim chais. Something there is no opportunity for protestation from mecha in the case of something that, in the case of ownership or a slave that was owned. So we're going to talk, it's an interesting possibility that we're going to talk about in Shem next time.